This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Over the past few weeks, our colleagues at Morning Edition have been telling a series of stories called Family Matters about the challenges that over 50 million of we Americans now face. Multi-generational households, homes where two or more generations of adults live under one roof. We've heard stories of emotional and financial stress, especially for the so-called sandwich generation, people who care for their elderly parents and support their still struggling adult children. Natasha Shimon Gilmore's family is among those featured in the series. She joins us now from Capitol Heights in Maryland, and nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Hi, thank you. Welcome.
And until a couple of years ago, your father was living in North Carolina. What made you decide to bring him north to Maryland to live with you?
Well, actually, someone called us to say my dad was in trouble, so we went in to investigate to see what was going on, and that's when we made our decision. We sort of monitored him for a couple of months, leaving him on his own, and it got worse and worse with him locking himself out of the house, making keys, not remembering things, and that's when we made the decision that he needed to be with us and be safe.
Because it sounds like dementia.
Yeah.
And obviously you need to take care of him and watch him. Difficult decisions to make.
Very much so, because in Maryland I only have a two-bedroom house. Very, very small. Was not ready for any additional anybodies. And also didn't know how to actually break the news to him and his reaction to that. It was very hard.
And so what do you do with your dad?
For the first year, we tried a home health aide, and we did not like that because it appeared Dad thought the person was his girlfriend, and so that didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The second home health aide was a close friend, and that person was a little too unprofessional, so we didn't like that either. Our food bill doubled because that person ate whatever they cooked for Dad, and it just was not good financially. We now have decided recently to put him into the Crescent Ridge Adult Daycare Center, which is in, I think it's in Clinton. And that seems to be working out for me, but Dad doesn't like it. So it's just a never-ending story.
And there's no perfect solutions, and there probably not going to be one.
No, I've thought about, I can't quit work. That won't work. And I can't ask my mom. My mother's sick. I can't ask my brother's sick. I can't ask my husband. He's working and sick. Can't put the burden on my son that's 23, because I think that's a bit much.
Your son is also living at home?
Yes.
All in a two-bedroom house?
Yes. Well, we did. My living room was L-shaped. So I bought some wood paneling, some drywall, and I made a room out of the living room for my dad.
You've obviously made great sacrifices to do this. Family is family. You've got to do it, but you're making a lot of sacrifices here.
Yes, I am. Wanted to go back to grad school. Had actually started, but I actually don't have time to study, so I didn't finish. I have some master's credits. Would love to have a master's degree. Need a car badly. I continue to buy them from the, not the junkyards, but the auctions. saving money has become zero now. I used to save, but now I don't. All of my allowance money goes to my mom, my brother, and my dad.
And another question, as you look at what is happening to your father, what are you now thinking about what happens to you?
Yeah, that's a toughie. My daughter and I were just talking the other day about all of us sitting down and making up some plans to discuss what happens to us in the long term. And that's a hard thing to do, is to get family together to talk. So I think I'm personally just going to get paperwork in order, try to get the will done and the health director paper done, and maybe leave them a letter because it's just hard to get together. Everyone's working different schedules, and everyone's trying to take care of what they take care of, and it's really, really complicated. In the old days, I think people were married, and I think the summary was that when you died, you know, your spouse would get everything. And so I have a husband who, in the 2012, still believes that's it. My husband will not get a will. He will not do any paperwork. So I appear to be that one-woman army, so I'm just going to get my paperwork in order and hope that things work out.
You ought to see if you can look up the word intestate for instructions, because that's going to be a problem. In any case,
I know.
I'm sure he does too.
Yeah.
But what are you thinking about though when it's 30 years from now?
Well, my daughter and I talk a lot. I'm hoping. I'm sort of hoping to pass down this proactive nurturing to my daughter and my son. Hopefully they will pick up how I am and act the same, and hopefully they'll take care of myself or my husband when something comes up in the years to come, and hopefully we'll have all this paperwork in order that we should have. My mom and dad sort of didn't have that in place, and so we're just sort of scrambling. With mom, she has no retirement. With dad, he did have retirement, so we're just sort of working them in different capacities.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your story. It was very interesting, and I know it's not easy to talk about.
All right. Thank you for asking.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Natasha Shimon Gilmore with us from Capitol Heights, Maryland. If this is your story, tell us how you deal with several generations under one roof and deal with the emotional and financial stresses they involve. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. NPR's David Green has been telling these stories on Morning Edition. He's one of the hosts of that program and correspondent for NPR, of course. And David, nice to have you here with us in Studio 3A.
It's good to be here, Neil. Thanks for having me.
And Natasha, not alone. There's so many stories like this.
There are a lot of one-woman armies out there, one-man armies. And, you know, I hear her say that's exactly what struck me on our first visit to see her in this cramped house in Maryland. I mean, it was amazing to think of how she kept her composure. I mean, she has a son in his 20s who's living there, and we've actually spoke to him today, and we're going to be airing a lot of what he had to say next week. And, you know, he talked about the example that his mother set for him and how hard she worked to make sure that he was protected from, you know, a very difficult environment growing up. And now she's taking care of, you know, her father. And we went with her to drop him off at the adult day center. And that was such an emotional decision. You know, it was a reality she faced. She had to keep her job to keep supporting the family and needed to find somewhere for her father to go. But it was hard to let go of him during the day. And, you know, one of the striking images from when we visited her, Neil, was she had written dementia in these big block letters on a bulletin board. And she said, I just have to remind my father day in and day out that he does have this disease. He has this challenge. And I mean, you just can imagine that the emotions that just fill every single day of her life. And she said she sometimes breaks down. She sometimes just falls in her bed and kind of, you know, just cries out for help. But most days she's smiling and laughing, and she's the person who you just heard. And yeah, these stories are just, they're all over the place. We're following these three families, but we've been getting so many stories from listeners sending in their, you know, their own really emotional situations.
And every story is different. Every family, of course, is unique, but it seems to be about difficult choices.
Yeah, I think that sums it up very well. You know, our families are in different socioeconomic levels. Geographically, they're in different places. Situations not identical. But yeah, when you're living under the same roof, I mean, every choice is difficult. Every day sort of brings a new challenge and a decision about how much sacrifice to make. If I'm going to give money, if I'm going to give attention and time to either my kids or my parents, you know, what am I taking away from myself, and what am I prepared to sacrifice? And you know, love means so much to these families. Their automatic reaction is, well, I'm just going to give as much as I can. But when you're talking about your own retirement, your own life, you know, your own job, I mean, it just presents impossible choices.
And it's hard to put a dollar sign on a family member.
It is. I mean, one of our families just south of Baltimore, Yolanda Hunter, you know, she's in her 40s and she left her job. She thought it was going to be for 1 year. It quickly turned into 2 years. And she just did that because she wanted to be the full-time caregiver for her grandmother. But, you know, if you start adding up the amount of money that she's losing in terms of income, in terms of retirement, and, you know, in terms of status within a company, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
We're talking about multi-generational families, adults of several generations living under one roof. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And Leanne is on the line with us from Las Vegas.
Hi, Neil. Listen to your show every day out in the car here in Las Vegas while I'm eating my lunch.
Well, thank you for that.
Yes, I was caught in that multi-generational taking care of everybody a few years ago with my mother, and I had a husband and children and a full-time job also. When I was starting to care for my mother, as she declined, we found that it was just too much to the point where I could not lift her anymore. She went blind, and it was just too much for me to do. I didn't have the medical knowledge to help her that she needed at that time. And fortunately, years ago, she had taken out a long-term care insurance policy, unbeknownst to us. And one day she just asked me, look, she says, can I just use my long-term care insurance policy and go to someplace nice here in Las Vegas? I'm like, yeah. So we checked every place in Las Vegas, found the perfect place for her, very expensive, but her long-term care insurance covered almost all of it. And so therefore, now she has since passed away. She had wonderful care, by the way. She has since passed away, and so my husband and I decided that we were going to do that too. So we got long-term care insurance. And it's expensive, but we know that we will not be burdening our children. I mean, even it's still a burden on the children. Even if you have long-term care insurance, it's still a burden. But if you have that to help. Now, my Mother's Day, they didn't offer the home health care component to long-term care insurance. You just went to a place and that was it. Nowadays, they offer the long-term care home health component.
Do they still offer, though, a lifetime guarantee?
Well, that's very expensive. That was without our reach. We could not afford that. My mother was able to afford that, and she did have unlimited care, lifetime care. Now, my husband, we were only able to afford 2 years on him and 3 years on me. But the maximum amount of time that a person stays in a facility is about 2 years before they pass away.
Well, that's an average time, and it's going to make another difficult decision to time that right, isn't it?
Exactly. But with the home health care component, you can run that out longer.
Well,
the 2 years or the dollar amount.
Leanne? Thanks very much for the call. Good luck, and I'm glad it worked out for your mom. Appreciate that. We're talking about multi-generational families. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. A record number of Americans are feeling squeezed. Their adult children still live at home. Aging parents need daily care. In many cases, all three generations live under the same roof. We're talking about the generation stuck in the middle, the sandwich generation, and the many difficult decisions they face over money, duty, and family. NPR correspondent David Green and senior business editor Marilyn Gwax recently launched a series on Morning Edition and on NPR.org that focuses on these issues. They follow three families and work through them. You can find a link to the NPR series Family Matters, The Money Squeeze at NPR.org. We'd like to hear from you if this is your story. How are you dealing with several generations under one roof? 800-989-8255. Email talk at NPR.org. You can also join the conversation at that website, NPR.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. David Green still with us here in Studio 3A. And Marilyn Gwax now joins us here as well. Marilyn, nice to have you back on the program.
Hi, Neil.
And how many people are we talking about here?
Well, this is really a significant number, especially since this recession. The tendency right after World War II was for people to go out and form their own households. Everybody wanted to get that nice house in the suburbs, or college students wanted an apartment as soon as they graduated. But because this recession has been so serious, that pattern has largely reversed. A lot of people are moving back in with their parents if they're young people, or older people who maybe thought once upon a time they would retire to Florida now find they really can't afford it, and so generations are stacking up. And the most recent census data that we have is that between 2007 and 2009, so keep in mind this is still fairly early in the downturn, the number of people where there were adults of different generations living in the same household jumped more than 10%. Today we have about one in six Americans is living in a household where there are more than one generation of adults living there. So this is a lot of people. And the thing is, with the demographic changes that we've got coming, that is lots more baby boomers with parents living longer and longer, this is a trend we're likely to see even more of in coming years, where we'll have tens of millions of people living where there are many generations under one house, under one roof, and sharing the burdens, the joys, the finances, all in one household.
And the decisions of the that sandwich generation, the people in the middle, the financial decisions can be profound. These are people in their 40s and 50s. This is what used to be considered prime earning years. This is when you're supposed to be socking away money for your own retirement.
That's exactly the problem for especially women. Yes, there are some men who stay home, but it's sort of disproportionately, probably 2 out of 3 at least, are women who stay home to help with aging parents. And also in many cases, they have children or young adult children right out of school living with them. So they've got lots of burdens and they're trying to work. Sometimes it seems like the good decision is just to drop out, stay home, and you'll save money. But the studies show that actually you lose so much by dropping out of the workforce. Not only do you lose your income each week, your paycheck is gone, but you're not contributing to Social Security. So someday when you're 80, your Social Security benefit will be less because you're not in the workforce. And it's also difficult many times to get back to work. If you've been out 3, 4, 5 years taking care of a loved one and suddenly at 60 you try to find a new job, That's a tough turn because your skills are a little rusty. You've been out of the workforce a while. So it's a very big decision to step out of the workplace to take care of a relative.
Let's get another caller in. This is Bryce. Bryce with us from Flint, Michigan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I did make that decision that you just mentioned. I came home to take care of a parent after a stroke. And I wanted to mention the situation that arose between my siblings and I. You know, I give volunteer to take on the bulk of the work, but it turned out that I basically did everything, and a great amount of resentment arose, which is still to this day, 5 years after my father's death, exists. We don't speak. And I just wanted to mention that the person that you're talking to from the family who said she's talking to her daughter, that's so important because we never had that talk. And I think if we had that talk before my father had a stroke, maybe we could have weathered this much better than we did.
And how many siblings do you have?
I have 2, a twin brother and a younger sister.
And you don't talk to your twin brother?
No, we were incredibly close, and we don't, unless between lawyers, we haven't spoken in 5 years.
Wow.
And I've heard that from, we had a service that helped us somewhat, and I heard that from the worker, from many of the families that he dealt with, and particularly because that decision, that talk wasn't had beforehand, and, you know, they did not lock down who is going to do what, how it's going to take place, et cetera.
Any regrets?
No, none at all. In fact, I'm in a second phase of my life. As a result of quitting my job, et cetera, I was underemployed, and I decided to go back to school, so I'm now going to school to become a neurologist at 55 years old.
Well, Bryce, thanks very much for the call. I hope things work out.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. David Green. Those kind of tensions, you'd like to think that everybody sees their duty and pitches in. It's not always the case.
You know, it's not, and people have their own reasons for not pitching in. Sometimes it's a reality. Sometimes it's just a sort of different view of responsibility. You know, listening to Bryce, it brings to mind one of the families we're talking to in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the Martin Hawkins family. There are two women who are in their 40s who have joined forces to take care of their 87-year-old grandmother. She has a trust that was set aside, and so the family decided that some of that money should go to help her care. But these two women were very worried about what other members of the family who weren't pitching in would think. You know, were they taking advantage of the situation? Would other family members not appreciate all the work they were doing? So they actually turned to an elder care lawyer to sort of answer some of these questions. And she advised them to actually structure, a legal document establishing that this money was being spent for her care to avoid these tensions that might come up much later, you know, when she passes away and decisions are made about, you know, where her money should go. So I think what Bryce was saying, certainly resonates. I mean, there's a lot of value in dealing with, you know, potentially tough decisions and tensions ahead of time, having those conversations, maybe turning to a lawyer or an advisor who could kind of structure something that would avoid some really hard conversations down the road.
And Marilyn, we were hearing about tensions within one generation, the siblings. What about intergenerational tensions?
We've had a lot of response from people sending in their life stories about what's happened in their homes. And one of the things that comes through is there's a lot of anger in some households towards younger generations, where the sandwich generation feels like they're doing the best they can, taking care of the parents. And they've got, say, a 26-year-old son who's at home and doesn't really have a job. And there is a certain, obviously not every family, but there is a certain component out there where there's becoming more and more intergenerational anger, I think, where young people feel, hey, you wanted me to go to college. I took on all this student debt. Now I've graduated in a world where there are very few jobs for young people. It's tougher for my generation. And if I need to chill on the couch a little bit, don't be so angry about it. And the parents feel, you could go out and get an apartment. You just need 3 or 4 roommates, and you won't have great broadband, and maybe you're going to walk to work, but you could do it if you wanted to. You just prefer to have me do your laundry. So there's kind of this tough dynamic out there in some households where there's pressure from the parents saying, get moving. Kids are saying, you don't understand what's going on with my generation. And there are family stresses like that. And the sandwich generation feels put upon, that they're taking care of a lot of still the lingering World War II generation. And then they've got all the young folks who aren't moving on.
Let's go to Shirley. Shirley's on the line with us from Cody, Wyoming.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a mother who is 85 years old, is suffering from dementia. And last year we added on to our house so that she could come and live with us. Although she stayed with us in her new suite, she just refuses to come because she just is such an independent person. And it's just been really difficult on all of us to find a way for her to get here now that we've made a place for her.
And what are you going to try to do to convince her, do you think?
She sees a neurologist here in Cody, and I'm hoping that the neurologist will be able to, at some point, tell her that she can no longer live alone. I've had conversations with her, and it just really goes into an angry place with her. So I think that's going to be the solution to it, although I worry about her in the meantime. She's about 2.5 hours away from me, and it's tough to check in those long distances.
So she lives out by herself in a town or a cabin or?
Yeah, it's a little town. It's like I say, it's about 2.5 hours away in Riverton, Wyoming, and it can be tough getting there, especially in the wintertime.
Yeah.
So we're just hoping that there will be a sign that she will become really afraid and want to move, but I don't think that'll happen soon enough. I think we'll have to have doctor intervention.
So an outside authority figure.
Right.
Boy, that's not easy.
It's really not. Fortunately, I've gotten my relationship back with my brother. That was a little bit goofy for a while, but he and I are finally on the same page with how we need to go about all of this. I know a previous caller talked about losing that relationship. Fortunately, mine was rocky and it came back, and we're just going to try to do the best for my mom.
Good luck, Shirley.
Thank you so much.
Let's see if we get another caller. And this is Paula. Paula with us from Santa Rosa, California.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening to the program, and all of those choices are really, really difficult, but for me, the choices that I had to make concerning my parents' health care were the most difficult. My mother, who had advanced lung disease and lived with me in North Carolina, my father had profound dementia and heart trouble, and I made the choice when I moved to North Carolina to leave him in a nursing home in Louisiana. But I was still the primary caregiver in that I had to make all of the decisions. So balancing that along with working was extremely difficult. Ultimately, my father's heart condition had progressed to the point where the doctors said that if he didn't have a pacemaker, he was going to die. So I had to make the choice to not put the pacemaker in because of the advanced dementia, which my siblings were actually, they supported me in that decision, but other family members were quite vocal about the fact that I had killed my father because, of course, he only lasted a matter of weeks after that.
And I'm sure this decision was not made lightly, but I suspect it's a decision that haunts.
You know, I thought a lot about that because my father passed in 2003. And, of course, you know, you always second-guess yourself and you go back and forth. I don't regret the decision that I made. I wish that I had been in a position where I hadn't had to make it.
Yeah.
But I still firmly feel that it was the right decision to make.
I'm not questioning your decision. I just suspect that.
Yeah, no, I know. But that, and I think that that's probably the most difficult thing that people in our position have to do. It's the choices that we have to make, the decisions that we have to make on behalf of someone else.
I think you're right, Paula. Thanks very much, and I'm sorry that happened.
Thank you.
We're talking about Family Matters, a series that's been running on NPR's Morning Edition. Correspondent David Green is with us, along with Marilyn Giewax, NPR Senior Business Editor. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email from Frank. I'm just writing so that you may be able to share how my family is doing this and how it's helping everyone. My wife is 33. I'm 30. We have two small children, one on the way. I invited my in-laws, they're in their 60s and newly retired, to live with us. We bought a house together that fits our needs. We split all the bills. My in-laws help care for the children while my wife and I work, while we expect that we will be taking care of them as they get older. This also gives them more financial freedom to enjoy their retirement without needing to get a second job. This works out well for all of us, especially my children who have the benefit of family with them over a daycare center. So, Marilyn?
You know, I think that we're going to see more of this sort of thing. Housing is starting to shift a little bit away from that suburban model where it's exactly a husband and wife and two kids.
2.3 children, yeah.
Exactly. There's more and more need for this sort of flexible housing. There are things called granny pods, for example, a little sort of a mobile home you can put in your backyard where your mother can have a separate place to live but still be part of your household. So I think we're going to see zoning laws loosening up and some of the construction changing to suit this multi-generational thing.
Let's see if we get one more caller in. This is Annette. Annette's calling from Pensacola.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a caregiver since 1995. My dad had a subdural hematoma. My sister at 35 was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Mm. And my mother, all in the same year, she had a stroke and she's been in a wheelchair since then. For 7 years after that, my sister and my dad finally passed away in 2003, and I've been taking care of my mother exclusively by myself. I have a brother, and I work a full-time job, and it's just me and a caregiver that I hire to come in and sit with my mom, and it's been a very difficult road for me to travel, and as I travel the road, I find more and more of my friends doing the same thing that I'm doing, sacrificing themselves to take care of their parents because they don't want to give them over to a nursing home or someone else that may not have the love and care that they would have for their parents.
But Annette, what happens to you?
I don't know because I'm a single black female. I have no other, I have no husband or anyone else to take care of me, and I have no idea. I put that in the background praying that I won't get sick, and if I do get sick, that I'll just pass away and no one will have to worry about it.
That's an awful thing to have to think about, that if the end, when the end comes, it should come quickly and not be extended. I'm so sorry for your situation, Annette, I know that in a sense it's been worth it, but it's been a very difficult road, as you say.
Yes, sir, it has, but I don't feel sorry for that. If it comes, it comes, and I'm satisfied with that. At least I did what I was supposed to do.
Annette, thank you very much.
Thank you.
David Green, what's coming up in the next part of the series?
Well, you know, we've introduced our listeners to our three families now, Neil, and that now we're gonna continue following their stories, but turn to some issues. you know, what should you do about your retirement as you think about the sacrifices you're making for different generations? What should the younger generation do about, you know, should they at some point leave this multi-generation home and go out on their own, or is it worth staying there? Is this a, you know, are there pluses? And one of the themes that is just worth pointing out, Neil, is despite all the sacrifices and all the struggles, there are moments of joy. And this is something a lot of our experts have talked about, and a lot of the families, there are positives to all living together. You feel closer and really feel the love.
Thanks, everybody, for calling and telling us your stories, these difficult choices that you had to make. And I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody's call. David Green, thanks very much for your time.
It's a pleasure, Neil.
And Marilyn G. Wax, always nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Coming up, the CIA breaks up the latest Al-Qaeda underwear bomb plot to bring down a jetliner. NPR counterterrorism correspondent Dina Temple-Raston will join us. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.